Under current law, that doesn't count towards your lobbying limit unless you're speaking to influence legislation. If you're talking about your dog, if you're talking about a piece of pie, none of that time counts. It's just the time you spend trying to change the law. And when you spend a lot of time trying to change the law with a legislator, you're a lobbyist. I'm just going to leave you with one thing that maybe disturbs me more than anything, and it will let you know what will happen if we don't adopt this amendment. You know, one of the lobbyists came up to me and I said to him in jest, you know, you better start opposing this bill because if we make it easier for you to donate money, it's going to cost you a lot. And he said to me, that's great. I love donating money to legislators. That's why you should vote for this amendment, and that's why you should vote against this bill ultimately. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. Question before the body is the adoption of Amendment Number 2. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, clock the roll. Anyone wish to change your vote? Clerk, tally the board.
13 yeas, 25 nays.
So Amendment Number 2 has failed to pass the House. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next amendment?
Amendment Number 3 by Representative Guerra, beginning page 4, lines 14 and 15.
House standard ease. Prior to the at ease, we were debating. No, we're ready to go to the next amendment. Mr. Majority Leader.
I'll wait until somebody moves the amendment.
Madam Clerk.
There's a new amendment number 3 by Representative Guerra to page 4, lines 14 and 15.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move amendment number 3.
Object.
Really?
There's unanimous objections. Almost.
You'd like to place a call on the House.
Here. Call has been placed on the House.
For the bill.
On the bill. Representative Guerra, while satisfying the call.
Oh, well, Mr. Speaker, I've heard the concerns of the majority members, and I think I've come up with an amendment that they can support. Currently, 12 hours a month of lobbying wasn't enough because the idea was that, you know, if you really pack in the meetings with legislators and you meet, you do 15 minutes with one legislator and then 15 minutes with the next and you pack them in all day and then you pack them in the next day, it might be more than 12 hours. So Amendment Number 2 says that if it's more than 12 hours, but still only during two calendar days during the month, then it's still okay and you're still not a lobbyist. And only above that do you have to register. So I frankly think that this meets the concerns of the members, but if somebody feels that they need to lobby more than 2 days a month and not be considered a lobbyist, I guess I'd like to hear why. Thank you.
Representative McGuire.
Mr. Speaker, I object to the amendment.
Representative Rogeberg.
Mr. Speaker, this reminds me of another fiscal amendment we should have. We should have the time clocks at the doors of each legislative office to make sure that the time in and out is clocked in. I reject this amendment.
House standard ease while we're waiting for the call to be satisfied.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what? House, please come back to order. Call has been satisfied. Further debate on Amendment Number 3. New Amendment Number 3. Ready for the question. The question before the House is the adoption of Amendment Number 3. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, lock the roll. Anyone wish to change your vote? Clerk, tally the board.
10 yeas, 28 nays.
And so Amendment Number 3 barely fails to pass the House. Madam Clerk, are there further amendments?
Amendment Number 4 by Representative Guerra to Section 2.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move Amendment Number 4.
There is an objection. Representative Guerra.
This amendment deals with a completely different part of the lobbying bill. It has to do with when a corporation goes to an agency and tries to get the rules changed in the middle of the game. I think the public should know about that. And I frankly, I'm standing here and I believe that there's just a typo in the bill. If you look at page 3, look at the underlined portions. If you look at A and C and D and E, those all seem to be written appropriately. Those all say that you can present your case to an administrative agency under existing law, and that's not considered lobbying. I agree with that. It's just B, and I think maybe the person who's carrying this bill might be able to say whether or not this is just a typo. But under this bill as written, you as, let's say, an oil company who's been denied a permit can go to the Department of Environmental Conservation and say, you know, why don't you change the law just for our benefit so that we can have a weaker oil spill contingency plan? Why don't you change the law for our benefit just so we can pollute a little bit more? Why don't you change the law for our benefit just so maybe we can protect the public safety a little bit less? And that's not considered lobbying, the way this is written. It sounds like lobbying to me. If you're trying to get the law changed for your business to harm the public, that seems like lobbying. Now, this section B would be fine if the words used in A were the same as the ones in B, which is, it wouldn't be lobbying if you were trying to work on the issuance, amendment, or revocation of a permit, license, or entitlement under existing statutes, regulations, or policies. That would be okay. And but without those words, this bill as written lets a company with an axe to grind go into an agency to try and change the law for its own personal benefit, and it says that's not lobbying and that's just wrong. If the carrier of the bill would agree to adding the words existing statutes, regulations, or policies, that would satisfy my concern.
Representative McGuire?
I would agree. The final statement.
Representative Rockberg?
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to... this particular section for the information of the body was added in the Rules Committee at the request of AIPAC. If you would look at, for sake of speed, on your desk, an amendment that takes care of this, then I think what we should do is, under the recommendation of the body, to pick up the tempo, is to reject this amendment or have it withdrawn, and we will be accepting amendment number 6. That would be preferred action because it's already been drafted by the drafter.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative McGuire.
I would support the recommendations of the Rules Chair. That makes sense.
Representative Cotulla.
It's not quite the same amendment, so I think maybe we need a brief of these.
House, please come back to order.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Guerra.
I'm going to withdraw amendment number 4, and the concept is going to be incorporated into the next amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, without objection, amendment number 4 has been withdrawn. Madam Clerk, please read the next amendment.
Amendment number 5 by Representative Guerra, beginning page 2 on line 25.
Amendment number 5.
Without objection, Representative Guerra has withdrawn amendment number 5. Madam Clerk, are there further amendments?
Amendment number 6 by Representative Cotulla to page 3, line 8.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment. I also have an amendment to the amendment.
Okay. Is there an objection to the amendment number 6? There is an objection. Representative Cotulla, you have an amendment to the amendment.
The amendment to the amendment incorporates what the representative from District Number 23 was adding. So at the beginning of the insertion on line 2 of the amendment, you would add the language under existing statutes, regulations, or policies, and then you would continue with the ongoing language. And the meaning of that amendment to the amendment is, when you're dealing with the administrative agency on an issuance of a permit or permit action, you'd be coming there under the set of laws that you're currently under. You're not going there to try to change things to deal with your situation. So that's the amendment to the amendment.
Is there an objection to the amendment to the amendment? And without objection, then the amendment to the amendment has been adopted, which brings back before us amendment number 6 as amended. Is there objection to amendment number 6? There is an objection. Representative Grunberg.
Yeah, just for the purpose of asking a question. If the members would look at page 3, lines 2 and 3, the deletion of the phrase "or quasi-judicial." There are two types of agency actions, and we've discussed this in one of the committees. Quasi-legislative, which is quasi-rulemaking, or quasi-judicial, which is adjudicatory in the sense that it may involve the issuance of a permit or something like that. It sounds to me under amendment number 6 like we're getting into something that's quasi-judicial because you're talking about issuing something under existing law. And that's a quasi-judicial determination, as I recall my administrative law from law school. And that, with that question, my question would be, if I'm right, do we have to keep the phrase "or quasi-judicial" on lines 2 and 3 to be consistent?
Representative Cotullo.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, these are the exemptions to administrative action, and it's what administrative action does not include that we're amending. So in the above section where you're talking about what administrative action means, I guess the answer is I don't think so. Because this is the deletion of what it is. Thank you. I wasn't very good at administrative law.
Thank you, Representative Cotullo. Is the objection maintained? Without objection, Amendment 6 as amended is adopted. Madam Clerk, please read the next amendment.
Amendment number 7 by Representative Cotullo to page 4, line 24.
Representative Cotullo.
Amendment.
Only, Mr. Speaker.
There is an objection, Representative Cotullo.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The reason for the amendment is this. Currently, under our ethics law, we have a $250 limit for gifts or services in any calendar year from one person. So this, as it's written in the bill, if we don't amend it, could conceivably result in some members thinking that they could go to an event, you know, win a cruise, win a plane trip, win something over that $250 amount, thus violating our current ethics code. So really this is an effort to try to bring the two together so that someone does not unwittingly simply look at APOC's rules and think that they could accept that large a gift, because currently under our ethics law you can't. Thank you.
Representative Rogberg.
Therefore, Mr. Speaker, I remove my objection and urge adoption.
Without objection, amendment number 7 is adopted. Madam Clerk, are there further amendments?
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to withdraw amendment number 8.
Without objection, amendment number 8 has been withdrawn. Madam Clerk, please read the next amendment.
I have amendment number 9 by Representative Berkowitz is being copied.
Perhaps I could just speak to it very quickly.
Without objection, why don't you see if we can understand it as quickly.
On page 3, lines 2 and 3, I was seeking to restore the terms "or quasi-judicial action." There's some agencies that the state have that are designated as quasi-judicial, for example, the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, and I don't want them to be removed from the strictures of the lobbying laws altogether. I think that perhaps we run the risk of removing them if we do not keep quasi-judicial in.
I understand the amendment, the conceptual amendment. Is there objection? There is an objection. Stand at ease. Back to order. Prior to the Eddies, we were under debate on amendment number 9. Is there objection to amendment number 9? Without objection, amendment number 9 has been adopted. Madam Clerk, are there further amendments?
I have no further amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
I move and ask unanimous consent that House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 89 Rules Amended be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
If there is an objection, this bill will be held over for tomorrow's calendar in the event we have to remove amendment number 9. Representative Sisna.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to request that we move back up
the calendar to introduction of guests.
Thank you very much.
Representative Sisna.
Mr. Speaker, the galleries have felt sort of lonesome recently because we haven't had anyone from District 22. But I looked back just a minute ago and I saw Jeff Ackerman, who is a neighbor of mine and who is the district representative for the Operating Engineers Local 302. He's lived in my neighborhood for 10 years, but he was born in Skagway, lifelong Alaskan. And among other things, he's responsible for the rearing of 7 children. So he's busy in many, many ways. I'd love to have us welcome him. Oh, never mind.
Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Under the same category, if I may.
Under the same category.
Thank you very much. Also in the gallery behind us is a gentleman from Fairbanks who is responsible for Local 302 in Fairbanks. If you could please help me welcome John Brown.
Is for the guest for introduction? Seeing none, Madam Clerk.
CS for Senate Bill 98, Transportation, by the Senate Transportation Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Civil Liability for Boat Owners and to Civil Liability for Guest Passengers on an Aircraft or Watercraft and Providing for an Effective Date. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 98, Judiciary, with the same title, recommending do pass Samuels, Holm, Ogg, McGuire, no recommendation, Guerra and Gruenberg. The report was signed by McGuire. Chair, there's one House Committee Substitute.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Transportation Committee Substitute, for Senate Bill 98 Transportation to accept the Transportation Committee Substitute before us.
Without objection, we have the Transportation Committee Substitute before us. Madam Clerk, are there amendments?
I have no amendments.
In that case, Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 98 Transportation be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
There is an objection. That bill will be held over for tomorrow's calendar. The House Standards Order. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item on the calendar?
House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 87, Judiciary, entitled An Act Relating to Principal and Income in the Administration of Trusts and Descendants, Estates, and the Mental Health Trust Fund, adopting a version of the Uniform Principal and Income Act and providing for an effective date. The bill's in third reading.
Under debate, Representative McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Would it be sufficient if I just said it's a good bill, it's not controversial, and I would ask for member support?
You ready for the question? The question before the House is the adoption of House Committee Substitute Senate Bill 87, Judiciary. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, lock the roll. Anyone wish to change your vote? Madam Clerk.
38 yeas, 0 nays.
And so House Committee Substitute Senate Bill 87, Judiciary has passed House. Mr. Majority Leader.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on the passage of House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 87, Judiciary be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the roll call vote on the passage of the bill will be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause, thus adopting the effective date clause. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item on the calendar?
Senate Bill 142 by the Senate Rules Committee by request of the governor entitled An Act Designating the Department of Natural Resources as Lead Agency for Resource Development Projects, making conforming amendments and providing for an effective date. The bill's in third reading.
Under debate, Representative Hines.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In recent years, the laws governing resource development have proliferated. There are now more agencies than ever with permitting authority over large resource development. DNR presently has statutory authority as lead agency for mining projects. This bill authorizes DNR to lead and coordinate permitting activities of agencies with jurisdiction over resource development projects, and it establishes the Office of Project Management and Permitting. Let's say Sam from Donlin Creek Gold Mine comes into DNR regarding his project. Sam's project person, say his name is Clay, brings all the resource agencies onto one table to talk to Sam. Each agency constructs their own budgets, whatever they need for personal service, contractual work, staff, public hearings. They give their total cost to Sam. Sam now has a complete picture of his total cost to his budget. Say if that total cost is $100,000, right then Sam can work out a total payment, a payment plan with DNR. With all the agency requirements that are there at the table, Sam can understand exactly what is expected of him. For example, DEC may require 6 water quality samples. Fish and Game may require 4. Rather than Sam having to go out and get 10 different water quality samples, Clay can negotiate with both agencies and come up with 8. But DEC retains the permitting power. Mr. Speaker, this is a good bill. Industry wins by gaining one-step permitting, a detailed and complete timeline. They essentially get a roadmap. The agencies win by sharing public noticing, public hearings. Their outreach programs can overlap. They maintain clear and intact cooperation and communication with each other. The public wins the most by being familiar with the entire extent of the project and by having one single point person that they can always talk to. Mr. Speaker, Senate Bill 142, it's a good thing.
Further debate, Mr. Minority Leader.
Thanks very much. I like the whole idea of everything going to a single place. That's why the legislator to my left and I have introduced something called a single application, and hopefully we'll have the chance to vote in favor of that soon. But my concern with this legislation has to do with the section of the bill that we tried to amend repeatedly yesterday. It's a section of the bill that seems to put a hierarchy in terms of what our resource developments are. There's no definition that I know of that describes what resource development is. Most of us think of it in various terms. Some people think of it as oil and gas. Some people think of it as mining. Some people think of it as forestry. Some people think of it as tourism. Some people think of it as science and technology. Some people think of it as fish. Well, the overbreadth of the lead and coordinate all matters relating to the state's review and authorization of resource development projects is going to lead to a conflict. It's going to lead to a conflict most pronounced in the issue of resource development as it regards our fishing resources. And I'm very concerned that what we've done with this bill is that we've said we are going to put fish below our other resources in terms of the level of protection they're going to have. We're going to say that DNR is going to dictate when it leads and coordinates resource development. It's going to dictate what happens with fish. And fish have historically been within the purview of the Fish and Game Department, and they ought to remain there. There's a special expertise there. But sometimes, just sometimes, there's conflicts between developing different resources in the state. Sometimes developing a fishing resource means maybe not exploiting a forestry resource, or maybe exploiting a forestry resource means not developing a fishing resource. There's no provision in this to sort out differences between the departments, to weigh and balance the different needs. It just simply says that it's all going to be within DNR's purview. DNR is going to dictate the terms, and that undercuts the role that Fish and Game has. And by undercutting Fish and Game's role, I think you do injury to the development of our sport, commercial, and subsistence fisheries.
Representative Cotula.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, we used to have a program that did this for projects that impacted our coastline, and it was called the Coastal Management Program. But given the situation with that program, I can see the concern and the need for some coordination. But the previous speaker just mentioned something that's interesting because I was just thinking the same thing. He was mentioning the overbreadth of this statute. I actually think that this proposed statute is both over and under inclusive. It's over because we're now talking about everything. We can lead and coordinate all matters relating to the state's review and authorization of a resource development project. You might not be able to make the Commissioner of DEC's final decision, but you're going to do everything right up to that. It's under-inclusive because it's still a may. It's still completely up to the Commissioner of DNR. And you know what we're really doing is instead of setting out in statute what we think should happen, instead of setting out the line for streamlining, like the one permit application bill, we are ceding our authority to the Commissioner of DNR. It's a regulations bill, and I should have recognized that right off. I didn't, but that's what we're doing. This is in the authority for the Commissioner of Natural Resources, and God bless Tom Irwin, but it's going to be all his. We're not going to see this again. This is going to go there. You heard mention of the Project Management and Permit Office. That's not in this legislation. That would have to be somewhere else, but the authority will be. So I think at the minimum we should have recognized that DEC and Fish and Game exist. I think that we should have asked for consultation and agreement with them formally. We didn't do that. So while I'm very much supportive of streamlining, supportive of efforts to bring our permits together, I don't like this method of it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Cotillo. Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are two ways to do what this bill tries to do. One is to respect the authority of the Department of Fish and Game, that since statehood has protected our fishing streams so well, that since statehood has guaranteed that we have the most vibrant fisheries in the world in the state. The other way to do it is to put Fish and Game in a position where it is not listened to, where it won't be able to protect our fishing streams. And inadvertently, that's what this bill does. If we want to do it the right way, we would vote this bill down and we would vote for the one-stop permitting bill that has been introduced by the member from Juneau who just spoke. Yesterday we discussed the ways that this bill may harm our fishing streams. Today I'll give you an example that's pretty close to on point. This is what happens when people are forced to listen to the Department of Fish and Game. There was a road project up in the Matsu Valley that was constructed over the last 2 years in the process of being constructed. It's a new interchange at the Palmer Wasilla turnoff. And the original plan was to fill over 20 acres worth of juvenile silver salmon rearing habitat. And the head of the Department of Fish and Game said, hey, wait a second. I mean, I know this is maybe the cheapest way to build this project, but you're going to destroy future runs of silver salmon, wild silver salmon, in an area where fishing is very, very important. And they fought and they fought. And after a few weeks, eventually the Department of Fish and Game was listened to. And over the next generations, as long as we don't make another ill-advised mistake, we will have a vibrant silver salmon population up in the Matsu Valley. That dispute was with the Department of Transportation. Fish and Game has historically had to speak very loudly to be listened to by other agencies. And we'll have similar circumstances with the Department of Natural Resources when it becomes the lead agency. You know, you quiet Fish and Game down, you tell them that they don't have an equal seat at the table, and all of a sudden we lose the fishing resources that we've done so well at protecting so far. It only took the other states in the lower 48 a number of decades to destroy their fishing streams, and I think everything will be fine for the next few years, but I think this is another step towards the long-term damage of our fishing streams. So I'm going to vote against this bill.
Representative Roeckberg.
I think I just want to point out to the body that under Section 101, sub 5, it's out of order to refer a debate to a bill or other matter not yet reported by committee. So I'd like to define that. Be careful.
Mr. Speaker, I apologize to the body for mentioning that I am co-sponsoring a bill with the member to my left that would have a single permit application, and I'll try not to mention that single permit application too much on the floor out of order anymore.
Thank you, Ms. Minority Leader. What bill number was that? Is there further debate? Ready for the question? The question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 142. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, lock the roll. After, does anyone wish to change their vote? Clerk, tally the board.
28 yeas, 10 nays.
And so the House has passed Senate Bill 142. Mr. Majority Leader.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on Senate Bill 142 be considered a roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the roll call vote on the passage of the bill would be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause, thus adopting the effective date clause. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item on the calendar?
Senate Joint Resolution Number 10 by Senators Green, Bundy, Caldery, Dyson, Ogun, Seekins, Ben Stevens, Gary Stevens, Taylor, Terrio, Wagner, Wilkin, Davis, Ellis, Elton, French, Lincoln, Olson, Guest, Representatives Lynn, Wilson, Holmes, Samuels, McGuire, relating to the Pledge of Allegiance. The Judiciary Committee considered the resolution recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 10 Judiciary with the same title, recommending do pass Samuels, Holmes, Guerra, Ogg, Grunberg, and McGuire. The report was signed by McGuire Chair. There's one House Committee Substitute.
Mr. Majority Leader.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Judiciary Committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution. Senate Joint Resolution Number 10 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, we have a Judiciary Committee substitute before us. Madam Clerk.
I have no amendments.
In that case, Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I think somebody in my staff has missed one that they put down a different number here. That's why I was stopped dead in my tracks. Well, with that, Mr. Speaker, I would move and ask unanimous consent that House Committee Substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 10 Judiciary be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Okay. Without objection, we are in third reading. Madam Clerk, would you read the title for the third and final time?
House Committee Substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 10 Judiciary relating to the Pledge of Allegiance.
Representative Hines. Representative Lynn.
I'm not near as attractive as the other colleague that you referred to, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm very pleased to support SJR 10 relating to the Pledge of Allegiance, and especially the phrase, under God. The illustrious Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is situated in the equally illustrious city of San Francisco, I think something in the air down there, has ruled the phrase under God to be unconstitutional. And that's the same pledge, I might point out, that most of us recited earlier today when we opened this House session, and which is recited in our public schools, the United States Congress, and I believe all the other 49 states. This case has been properly sent up to the United States Supreme Court, which we pray, and I hope we can still say the word or phrase, we pray, will confirm the pledge in its present form, including the phrase, under God. This resolution merely asks the Supreme Court to hear this bill and come to the appropriate decision. The bottom line is, if this case isn't fixed, all the public schools in the nine western states will be unable to legally give the Pledge of Allegiance. And I earnestly ask the support of my colleagues in this body to support this resolution. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Lynn. Ready for the question? The question before the House is the passage of House Committee Substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 10, Judiciary. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, lock the roll. If anyone wishes to change the vote, clerk, tally the board.
38 yeas, 0 nays.
Unanimously, the House has passed House Committee Substitute Senate Joint Resolution 10, Judiciary. We're on a roll. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item on the calendar?
House Bill 145, entitled An Act Relating to Public Interest Litigants and to Attorney Fees and Amending Rule 82 Alaska Rules of Civil Procedure. There are two committee substitutes.
Mr. Majority Leader.
I move the judiciary version.
Oh. I think that's where we were when we left off. I'll stand at ease. House, please come back to order. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I'd ask for a short recess for the purpose of having a majority caucus.
House will take a short recess for the purposes of a majority caucus now.
Let's go.
House, please come back to order. Madam Clerk. I don't know, do we need somebody to record this? We're ready to rock and roll. Where's your guys at? There's no motion yet. I didn't ring the bell. Okay, we're back to order. Prior to the at-ease, we were confused, amused, and I think we've got it all sorted out. So, Mr. Majority Leader.
I move to ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 145 with a new title be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Mr. Speaker, there's a motion currently pending.
What is the motion, Mr. Minority Leader?
The motion was to adopt the judiciary CS.
And that motion is out of order.
That motion can't be out of order.
Because you were not recognized when you stood up on the House floor.
Mr. Speaker, I believe if we check the record, I'm happy to go check the record. We can have an at ease.
We can have an at ease. Check the record.
You nodded at me. I stood up. I spoke.
I didn't call upon you.
Frequently, you don't.
You're often out of order. But I don't rule it. This would be the simplest way to do this. You get to the same end. That at ease. House, please come back to order, Mr. Minority Leader.
Okay, I'd call the House, Mr. Speaker, and I'd move to amend the motion.
Okay, there's a call placed on the House. Mr. Minority Leader, is a motion to amend the motion. Emotionally, I'm ready to hear the motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move that rather than adopting the Finance Committee version of HB 145, we adopt the judiciary version. It's really the amendment. It would be with getting rid of the paren, F-I-N, close paren, putting in paren, J-U-D, close paren.
Okay, there is an objection. The motion before the body is to amend the Majority Leader's motion, which was to adopt the Finance Committee substitute with the Judiciary Committee substitute. And it is not a procedural vote.
There's a call.
There is a call placed on the House. While satisfying the call, if we want to continue the dialogue, Mr. Minority Leader.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. As you said, this is not a procedural vote. This is a substantive vote. If anyone wants to look at a memorandum that I have and keep on my desk and do for purposes such as this, I'm happy to share it. But the reason why it's important to adopt the Judiciary CS instead of the Finance CS, as I said earlier in the morning, is that the Judiciary CS went through an exhaustive process. It was examined and had public testimony. The Judiciary Committee is the one charged with examining issues related to the Constitution, relating to law, relating to courts. They did a thorough job with the bill. The finance version is a CS that was dropped down on the Finance Committee. It was not investigated from a judicial perspective. There are a number of repealers of a number of cases contained in it. Those cases were not provided to members on the Finance Committee. Those cases were actually not even reviewed. Questions were asked of the person who was carrying the bill what the impact would be. Those questions were not responded to. So, Mr. Speaker, because the process was poorly served in the Finance Committee in terms of the judicial review of the bill, I think it's more appropriate that we adopt the judiciary version. It went through a lot of effort, and I'm not necessarily in accord with everything that the Judiciary Committee did, but I think that when a committee of this House does some work and another committee doesn't, we should adopt the version that reflects the labor of the members of this House.
Representative Guerra.
Mr. Speaker, on the point of this motion, the other reason it's so important to adopt the version that went before Judiciary is that's the version that the public had been responding to this whole year. But the brand new version, the brand new version affects many, many people who did not know that they were affected, who would have testified, who in prior years have testified against this bill. And those people have been prominent members of the Republican Party, prominent members from all walks of life, who have disliked this most recent version. And if they were allowed to be heard, I think it might affect the deliberations of this body.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. Sure, further debate on the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute. Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I stand to speak against the adoption of the Judiciary version. The reason is that it appears that it may, in fact, be discriminatory and therefore will not withstand a constitutional challenge. It makes little sense for us to pass a law that we know will be abrogated in the future. The finance version appears to be acceptable in that regard and therefore should be adopted. The process was legitimate. The committee system is working. I urge the members to not adopt the Judiciary version and to adopt the Finance version.
Representative McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I rise with apologies to the members here on the floor. Unfortunately, we did not get good legal opinions during the hearing, and it does appear, and it makes sense, just even a plain-faced reading of it, the test for equal protection is treating similarly situated people differently. And if you're going to do it, you have to have a legitimate government purpose. And I don't think that the fact that we don't like claims by environmental groups is a legitimate government purpose. So the only thing we can do at this point is adopt the finance version. So I would reject the motion that is before us to adopt the Judiciary version, and respectfully request that people go with the finance version.
Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'll be brief. The Finance Committee did have several hours of public testimony on this bill, so I do take offense a little bit when people say we didn't have proper public testimony on this, because we did. We heard from several different groups, so the word must have got out that we were hearing the finance group. I remember very distinctly an attorney with the disabled community spoke for quite a while on the bill before. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Meyer. Representative Cotula.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was able to sit in for part of this bill hearing in finance, and it's accurate that there was an attorney from the disabled community who spoke. However, the minority leader is also correct. There were direct questions asked of the sponsor, and or rather of the other body's sponsor of a similar piece of legislation, and the questions went unanswered. We asked specifically, so what drops out? And the answer was, they weren't sure. In terms of equal protection rights, you know, we're discriminating in both of these bills, frankly, and in terms of economic it's a very low standard in terms of what the state interest has to be. It's a sliding scale. So, you know, I don't think that stands water, but I will say that the process that was used with the finance version simply isn't the way that a bill that impacts legal rights should be done. And I'm trying to be very respectful, and I really appreciate my position for the representative who I'm replacing temporarily on that committee, and I tend to agree with the committee that the questions that are answered there really should revolve around the finance of this state. So I really would encourage you to adopt the Judiciary version rather than the finance. Thank you.
Mr. Minority Leader.
In wrap up on
this motion.
I understand this argument which I'm hearing for the first time, that the judiciary version was constitutionally defective. I'd like to know if that was the result of a memo or some kind of communication, and if that communication will be shared with all members of this body. I think that's the appropriate course to take when we're acting on a matter like this. Secondly, if this CS is not constitutionally defective, shouldn't we really be re-referring this bill back to the Judiciary Committee so it can do the work that it should have done in the first place? Mr. Speaker, this whole area of law is incredibly problematic, and I'm deliberately skirting the subject matter, but this whole area, the subject matter of the bill, because that's an appropriate argument at this time, but this whole question of public interest litigants is about litigation. It's not public interest accounting. And it ought to be in front of the Judiciary Committee. I appreciate that a lot of time was spent listening to people who testified in the Finance Committee, but those people showed up to testify to the Judiciary version, although some of them apparently had the been part of a 6 a.m. meeting that resulted in this CS, a meeting which I didn't know about, a meeting which involved members from industry, from the third floor, maybe from the other body. But, Mr. Speaker, it didn't involve anyone from this body that I'm aware of. Why are we doing this? The right course to take on a bill of this magnitude, something that fundamentally changes how we do business in the state, which I'm not going to over-dramatize what a public interest litigant does. This, to me, is an incredibly offensive piece of legislation. But it doesn't really impact that many issues. But when it does impact people, shouldn't we know what those impacts are going to be? And no one can tell me what they are. I asked specifically a few legal questions of the people that should have been able to answer them, and they couldn't. And because the Finance Committee wasn't constituted to do the Judiciary Committee's work, because the Finance Committee was looking at mostly the fiscal repercussions, which are minimal, of this, it seems wrong that we ought to just adopt this committee substitute, Mr. Speaker. If this motion fails, I will stand and ask that the bill be referred to Judiciary.
Call has been satisfied. Representative Groenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Insofar as there's been an attempt to raise a question on whether there is a reasonable basis, was a reasonable basis, we're only having certain types of litigation within the purview of this bill. The Attorney General drafted it. It's a governor's bill. And had the Attorney General felt there was a problem, they wouldn't have submitted the bill. I mean, I've never seen any opinion, any legal opinion, that says there's an equal protection problem. And as I say, we've got, I don't know how many lawyers over at the Department of Law. Certainly we'd have distributed to every member of this body a legal opinion by at least one of them. I mean, just to come up, and there was never any argument made like that in the House Judiciary Committee that I can recall. There's nothing like that in my folder. And we certainly had testimony by the Attorney General, by their staff. It is, in fact, and I'm looking at the purpose section that's been added. This, to my recollection, is contrary to the evidence we had in the Judiciary Committee. And we had quite a hearing on this bill about that the judicially created doctrine of public interest litigation costs has created an unbalanced set of incentives. That's not true. The unbalanced playing field is if there isn't such a doctrine. The little guy goes in because the state is doing something wrong or unconstitutional. And that person...
Point of order.
Mr. Chair, your point of order.
I think we're wandering off into the substance of the bill debate. And I would ask that the adoption of the one version or the other be left to the principle of what version rather than the debate of the bill itself.
Mr. Speaker, this goes to the heart of it. The issue is the adoption of a committee substitute, which is in the nature of an amendment. I can certainly debate the merits of the amendment. That's the heart of the whole thing here, Mr. Speaker. In fact, the reason the Supreme Court of this state adopted that doctrine in the McCabe case is because when you have a person, often without much money, going in and litigating against the state of Alaska, that's unbalanced. And don't forget the refuge of hope, the refuge of justice, equal justice under the law, is the court system. And if you close the door, or you don't at least allow the public interest litigant to get their attorney's fees and insulate them from an award of attorney's fees, that will chill the protection of constitutional rights and will deny equal protection under the law. So that was the evidence we heard, and it was not the evidence on page 1, lines 9 to 10 of this bill. There's no evidence that we heard in judiciary that the public interest doctrine has led to increased litigation. The number of cases that were cited and were presented to the committee was relatively small. And frankly, Mr. Speaker, most of them were not natural resource cases. A lot of them related to election challenges and redistricting. And I think the record in this state shows that this is a very, very, an area that the Supreme Court has consistently reversed in the past. And those cases have been brought under the public interest doctrine. And what we're talking about here is trying to set the redistricting right. And if we snarf this off, if we prevent this kind of public interest doctrine, it gives the impression that the legislature is trying to close the door to the Supreme Court in those cases which directly affect our own reapportionment. And that's definitely not good public policy. There was no evidence that we saw that there were arguments made with little merit, difficulties in compromising claims. And the only time that the state has had to pay is when the private litigants were right.
Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The process has been and is appropriate. It is within our rules. It's also within our rules to call the question. I call the question.
Question has been called. Question before the body is to adopt the Judiciary Committee substitute in lieu of the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 145. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, lock the roll. Does anyone wish to change their vote? Clerk, tally the board.
9 yeas, 28 nays.
So the motion to adopt the Judiciary Committee substitute has failed to pass, and therefore we have the Finance Committee substitute before us. Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move that HB 145 Finance be referred to the Judiciary Committee for further review. Mr. Speaker, we heard a little bit of testimony just a moment ago that there was some evidence that the Attorney General incompetently drafted this statute. And, you know, I'm not in a position here to judge whether the Attorney General's competence should be reviewed, but I think that's something that should be considered by the Judiciary Committee. We heard that there was some thinking that there might be a constitutional question here. Well, I didn't hear any evidence of the constitutional question at the Finance Committee, and it seems to me to be a naked pretext, and that's a damn poor way of doing the public's business. No one's shown me a piece of paper, no one's waved a piece of paper to me supporting that opinion. No one brought this matter to anyone's attention before this moment. This is wrong. This is a railroad job, and it is wrong. I know this is a priority piece of legislation for the third floor, but that's not how we do business on this floor. We do business by looking at what's in the best interest of the public by examining the legislation that's in front of us.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker. I would ask the minority member to please refrain from using language that he just did. I take personal offense to it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Representative Masick.
Which language is that?
I think that's... I'm unclear how I might have offended, so maybe someone could explain to me.
I guess, Mr. Speaker, if I may answer that. You know, you can talk about somebody and tell them they're wrong and disagree with them. What I hear from the minority leader is he is spitting it out, and it's very disrespectful how it comes out of what he's saying right now.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'll take that to heart. Let's talk about disrespect. Let's talk about disrespecting the process, disrespecting the rights of the minority, disrespecting the people of the state of Alaska. And that's what happens when a pretext is used to move a piece of legislation. That's what's happening here, in my opinion. And I'm sorry that I'm passionate about that. I'm sorry that I have zeal to protect the rights of the people. I'm sorry that I want to see this public process protected. But I will never, ever apologize for that. Never. And I am prepared to disagree and lose on the merits of this public interest litigant. But give it a fair hearing. Don't stack the deck. Every day I come into these chambers, and it's 28 to 12 when I'm lucky. 28 to 10 on a day like today. 28 to 8 for the last week. You don't need to stack the deck to win. But you need to give the public process its fair due. So send this bill back to the Judiciary Committee. Give it a full hearing. Produce that document that says that the Judiciary Committee version is unconstitutional. Make those arguments. Win on the arguments if you can. But you can't be afraid to put that in front of the people. You can't be afraid to give it a full and fair public hearing. That's not right. It's just not right.
Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Respectfully, I disagree with the mischaracterization of the process that we are in and the mischaracterization of the information that is probably forthcoming, given that we can get to the debate on the merits of the bill. I therefore, again, call the question on the motion before us so that we can get to the merits of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Whitaker. I'm going to allow Representative Guerra for his remarks. He did stand before you and yielded to you. Representative Guerra.
Mr. Speaker, I need to share the facts that I've discovered in the last 24 hours with this body, and they'll show that the minority leader is absolutely correct. Please, not a single member of this body should take what the minority leader said to be a condemnation of anything that any member of this body did, because it's not. The members of this body, the Judiciary Chair, held a valid hearing on a bill that she thought was the bill that the governor's office wanted. All the other committees did the same. But this is a railroad job, Mr. Speaker, and I need to share the facts with you. Over the last 10 years, this bill, in the form that has suddenly appeared over the last 24 hours, that version of the bill has showed up on this legislative floor every year for the last 10 years, with notice to the public, with notice to the members of the Republican Party, the members of the Democratic Party, the members of the Alaska Independence Party, with notice to every single member of society who's going to be affected by this bill. And when the public has had notice about this bill, they have showed up in droves and they have killed this bill every single year. When you have told them that this bill is going to be on the House floor, they have called us, they have written us, they have said this is a bad piece of legislation. It hurts people who are conservative. It hurts people who are liberal. It hurts developers. It hurts environmentalists. It hurts everybody. So what did we do this year? The governor introduced a version of the bill that just aimed at environmental groups. So none of the other people showed up. None of the other people who were given notice every single other year about this bill, who have beaten this bill back every single other year, showed up. And the bill got into the very late stages. And the bill got down to the 2-yard line. And all of a sudden, the third floor substituted the old version that raised the ire of the public across party lines, across philosophical lines, all of a sudden presented the brand new one that the public had beaten back every single year for the last 10 years. That's what's happened here, Mr. Speaker. It is a railroad job. Not a railroad job by anybody on this floor, but it's a railroad job. So You know, the public process works. And if we allow this bill to go ahead without allowing a public hearing, what we're saying is that we're scared of the public. What we're saying is that the public has beat the government for the last 10 years, and we're not going to let the public beat us again. Well, I think the public should be given a chance to beat government this time. They've beat us every single time over the last 10 years. I've been on the other side of the fence. I fought this bill as a citizen, arm in arm with Republicans, members of all parties, members of all walks of life. We fought this bill together. We've joined hands. We've been successful. Give the public a chance.
Good question has been called. The question before the House is to return House Bill 145 back to the Judiciary Committee for further review. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, lock the roll. Anyone wish to change your vote? Clerk, tally the board.
9 yeas, 27 nays.
And so the motion to return has failed past the House. Speaker, House stand at ease. House, please come back to order. Prior to the at ease, we were somewhere in time. Still have a motion before us. And that motion is to adopt the Finance Committee substitute. Is
there
there is an objection. Mr. Noy Leader.
Mr. Speaker, the Finance Committee substitute has received inadequate attention. There's a number of court cases referenced in it. There are questions that were raised in finance that were not answered. There are sections in the finance version that were not heard in any fashion at the judiciary level relating to bonds, which bonding before you can file a case. And you know, that really has minimally to do with public interest litigants. Seems to me that somebody at some break of dawn meeting decided to Christmas tree this bill, and I think we ought to take the presents out from under that tree.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to state this one more calmly. The hallmark of this legislature is that before we adopt laws, we give people public notice. So if they think that what we're about to do is a bad idea, they can say something. The version of the bill before us, if we adopt this finance version, is a bill that nobody received any notice of. Sure, the bill number was put on the public notice statement. And when people came into the Finance Committee, they thought they were dealing with the bill that has been around all year. And they found out it was a brand new bill, a vastly different bill. So really, the public received no notice of the last committee hearing on this bill. That's the point, and that's why
Mr. Speaker, the notice were duly published for the people as to the bill and its title, and that's our procedure. So I would ask the member and refrain from criticizing the procedural process.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll respect that last comment.
Representative Gere.
The public was certainly given notice of the bill number and the bill title. That bill number and bill title that they saw noticed applied to the bill that had been sitting around here all year. They didn't know that the substance of the bill was changed. And I don't even think the Finance Committee chairman knew the substance of the bill had changed. He showed up for work the morning of the hearing, and at the hearing was given a brand new bill. He didn't know it. The public didn't know it. A bad way to do business.
President Williams.
I scheduled a bill, and I take exception to the fact that I didn't know what I was scheduling. I think my office works very hard to try to get these bills out there. We work very hard to try to get the public involved. I don't know what we can do with the public. There's a lot of bills out here that I go home and talk to some of the people, and we give out our notices all the time, and most of the people don't pay attention or want to unless it affects them personally. And we gave the 5-day rule or the 24-hour rule on this, and that's what we have, a 24-hour rule. We can, if we don't like the 24-hour rule, then maybe we should think about changing that, Mr. Speaker, but we went according to our rules on this bill.
To that point, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Norlier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the 24-hour rule. Things are hectic enough at the end of session as it is, but think about this logistically, if you will. 24-hour notice was given that HB 145 was going to be heard in finance. That was the day prior to the Finance Committee hearing. At 6 a.m. in the morning on that day, some people or persons unknown got together and created a new version, a new CS. So, whereas the letter of a 24-hour rule for HB 145 was met, I would submit that clearly the spirit was not met. And there's virtually, it practices a deception upon the public if you notice one bill subject to the 24-hour rule, and I agree that the committee chair acted with appropriate notice and did what he was supposed to do. But the public did not have 24 hours notice of the CS. Nobody did. The CS didn't exist 24 hours prior to the hearing. So it's just impossible for the 24-hour rule to have been met. Which, I would submit, raises a new set of constitutional questions. And perhaps the anonymous writer of the other constitutional problems would be so kind as to provide me a memo with the constitutional response to a CS that violates the 24-hour rule.
Question before the House is the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, clock the roll. If anyone wish to change the vote, clerk, tally the board.
25 yeas, 12 nays.
So the Finance Committee substitute is before us. Second reading. Madam Clerk, are there amendments?
Amendment number 1 by Representative Garrett to page 1, line 6 through page 3, line 23.
Representative Garrett.
Speaker, I move the adoption of amendment number 1.
There is an objection. Representative Garrett.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm tempted just to race through this amendment. I know people want to get out of here. And I might have done that, except this amendment applies to a bill that I would bet not more than 10 members of this body have read yet, because probably if people have prepared, if they followed this bill all year, they've read a different bill than the ones that's before us. So I can't figure out a single way to explain this amendment without explaining the rule that we're changing. I'm sure if I stray too far, the rules chairman will let me know, and I'm going to try not to stray far. Mr. Speaker, in discussing this bill with members of this body, and this bill relates to a rule that's called the public interest litigant rule, a very large number of members of the body haven't been familiar with that rule, and so I need to explain what it is. For over 2 decades in the state, we have allowed people the right to access their government and challenge government misconduct. That's what the public interest litigant rule is all about. It applies only in cases against the state, not in cases against anybody else. It applies only in cases by members of the public. And it was in response to a very unique rule we have in the state that says if you file a suit here and you lose, you have to pay attorney's fees, and if you win, you get attorney's fees. That's a rule that doesn't exist anywhere else in the country. And it was discovered that members of the public, working class members of the public, small businessmen members of the public, poor members of the public, wouldn't dare challenge their government in court under our rule on attorney's fees because they were told the moment they walked into their lawyer's office, if you lose, you're going to have to pay a lot of money in attorney's fees to the other side. Do you want to take the risk of losing? Do you want to risk your savings? Do you want to risk your small business? And so the Alaska Supreme Court said, you know, as a matter of First Amendment rights, as a matter of due process, we should let the public challenge their government when they think the government has done something bad. We shouldn't scare people away from the courthouse. So we'll come up with this rule called the public interest litigant rule. The public interest litigant rule says that if you file a lawsuit against the state to challenge government conduct that you think is inappropriate, and you lose, you don't have to pay the state's attorney's fees. You're not scared away from the courthouse door by the fact that you don't have money. Well, the public interest litigant rule says, well, how do you figure out whether somebody is a public interest litigant? And the court says, well, it's devised a many-pronged rule, but the basic thrust of it is you can't fit within the special rule if you have money to make by filing the lawsuit. It has to truly be a matter of public interest. It's not a case for damages. If it's a case for damages, that just this rule doesn't apply. That's just somewhere else. But if you're truly trying to bring forth a matter of public interest, maybe you think the Department of Environmental Conservation has acted wrongly. You think the Department of Fish and Game has acted wrongly. You think the Department of Revenue has acted wrongly. You're allowed to bring a public interest litigant suit. And the full parameters of the rule are, if you lose the case, as long as it's not a frivolous case, if it's a frivolous case, you get punished. But as long as it's not a frivolous case, you don't have to pay attorney's fees if you lose. And if you win, you're allowed to recover your attorney's fees so you can find an attorney who'll take the case for you. That's the rule. So I'm going to save the bulk of my comments for tomorrow when this is on third reading after my amendment fails. Because I've been here long enough to know that when a bill hits the floor, that means it's because it's going to pass. And substantive amendments are going to fail. Regardless of how members of this body feel about it, they have to vote with the majority. But what my amendment does is it responds to the concern that we heard the Attorney General's office make and the governor make when they introduced this bill. You know, they said there are too many frivolous public interest litigant suits. You know, the funny thing is they actually weren't able to produce any evidence, but I've learned this session that you don't really need evidence to say something. As a matter of fact, back before the Finance Committee version, when we thought this bill just dealt with environmental cases, because that's what this bill said until the new secret version was adopted, we had Ledge Legal do an analysis, and they said of the 19 environmental cases that have been filed in the last 10 years, plaintiffs were right in 17 of them. The other two weren't frivolous, but the Attorney General's office says there's been this rash of frivolous public interest litigant cases. And they actually said, and those cases have been increasing. And so we actually asked Ledge Legal, and actually we found out that those cases have been decreasing. But why should we let the facts get in the way of what we do around here? In the first 5 years in this last 10-year period, there were 11 of these public interest litigant cases in the natural resources area. In the most recent 5-year period, there have only been 8. But I've heard the concerns, regardless of whether I agree that they're legitimate. And the concerns were, number one, that there are frivolous public interest litigant suits. So amendment number 2 says that if you file a frivolous public interest litigant suit, you have to pay the state's full attorney's fees as a sanction. I think that's the law already, but let's make it clear. And then I've heard this vague comment that, you know, maybe people file these cases because they can make money off of them. And the public interest litigant rule is that if you win your case, you're entitled to full attorney's fees. Well, I don't really want to do this, but to stop this bill, I've added this to amendment number 1. It says that if you win this case, you're entitled to 65% of your attorney's fees. That way, I've now responded to every single plausibly valid concern raised by the administration. We don't want people to make money on these cases. We do want to help them find somebody who'll file the suit for them. So if they win, if they prove that they're right, if they prove that the government has engaged in misconduct, let's give them 65% of their attorney's fees. It'll be a losing proposition for them, but it won't hurt them so much. If they lose, let's not impose attorney's fees against them unless their case was frivolous. So, Mr. Speaker, I'm going to save the rest of my comments on this bill till third reading. I request serious consideration of this amendment, and I request that before members vote this amendment down, they come up with the response in their head for why they're voting the amendment down before they press the red button. But if they can't come up with a response, I ask them to push the green button.
Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I stand to speak against the amendment. The amendment rewrites the bill. And by so doing, keeps us from debating the merits of that bill. Hopefully, we can get to that, if not today, then tomorrow. I urge members to vote no on the amendment.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Well, I would hate to have a serious debate about at least an amendment here, but let me tell you what you're doing. Subsection D of the bill, as it currently stands, talks about calculating an award of attorney's fees and costs, and it specifies the court shall include in the award only that portion of the services of the claimant fee, attorney's fees, and associated costs that were devoted to claims concerning rights under the U.S. Constitution or the Constitution of the State of Alaska, upon which the claimant ultimately fails. Let me give you a couple of examples of the kind of cases we're talking about. Anyone here remember McDowell case that overturned subsistence? Well, McDowell was part constitutional claim, part based on statutes. But the part that was based on statutes would no longer be entitled to recover attorneys. Only that portion that was devoted to the constitutional claim section. I'm not sure how the court's going to make that apportionment, but it will. And speaking of apportionment, let's think about the redistricting cases. Because the redistricting cases, well, there's a lot of factual stuff in a redistricting case. There's a lot of statutory stuff in a redistricting case. And there's a little bit of constitutional law in it. I know the Republican Party did very well in terms of attorney's fees at the last public interest litigant, with its public interest litigant fees. Well, next time there's a redistricting and someone challenges if this bill were to pass, then only that little portion that was devoted to constitutional claims could be recoverable. So all those expert costs, talking about the demographics, talking about population changes, talking about issues that weren't directly constitutional, not recoverable. Let's look at some of the other cases that have received public interest litigation status. There's a couple of abortion cases. Some of those are based on statute. Some of those are based on budgetary appropriations. But only that portion that's constitutional would receive recovery. Let's look at campaign finance reform. Something we debated earlier today and will debate for a while. That's a statutory thing. Primarily, there's a couple of tiny constitutional questions involved. But no attorney's fees would be recovered. So, you know, when people say just the constitutional claims are the ones that are entitled to recovery, well, that basically says nothing. I mean, constitutional claims at best constitute only a portion of any suit. Only a portion. And every member in here has seen a right protected through a public interest litigation. Every member in here. Kodiak Seafood Processors. Citizens for the Preservation of the Kenai River. These are cases. Now, they probably weren't all constitutional, so if this bill were to pass, recovery wouldn't happen. And, you know, I guess at some point we'll hear what the savings will be. But I'm also concerned that there's a great number of costs that are built into this. Because if you look at what the bill says, it relates to civil actions. Well, you know what's a civil action? Custody cases, civil action. The Department of Health and Social Services takes somebody's child and does it incorrectly. Now, there's going to be an increased cost for the state because people will be able to recover under public interest litigant. It changes the rules. It changes that dynamic. It's the law of unintended consequences. Guardian ad litems. Now those kind of actions can be brought, and if they have a constitutional claim, they can prevail under it. Probably most terrifying to those of you who are seeking cost containment through this measure is the notion of habeas claims. Habeas corpus, you have the body. It's when the government has someone in their possession, and for some reason, an action is taken, a civil action, under Civil Rule 86. The government's going to be forced to pay all the costs. Because we're dispensing with the whole notion of public interest litigant. I mean, the guy who's in jail trying to get out and suing under a civil habeas action, he's not doing it for pecuniary gain. He's not benefiting a broad class of citizens. He's not doing anything that the government would be expected to do otherwise. And yet that individual could be entitled to recover under constitutional claims. I didn't see any analysis of that. So, Mr. Speaker, let's do something that's just a little bit narrower than this bill does, something where the consequences are visible, something that adheres to the stated purposes of the proposed legislation. Let's adopt the First Amendment.
Representative McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, it's difficult to respond because the comments were so far outside the scope of this amendment, but I would just ask members not to support it, and I look forward to the debate tomorrow.
Representative Cotulla.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Going to have the same problem that the previous speaker mentioned, and that is staying within the ambit of the amendment because of the subject we're dealing with. But I want to try to talk about just the amendment. The amendment will change from the constriction of looking at only constitutional claims to going back and looking at public interest litigants in general. It seems that the intent of the original legislation and perhaps even the CS that finance has brought out, is really to try to slow down public interest litigant suits. Probably the most motivating factor of all in going to court is money. It's monetary. I mean, we can think of examples where all of us might have liked to have brought a suit, might have stood up for a right, might have done something, but for the money involved. If that's right, this amendment will slow down public interest litigation because it will no longer allow 100% of the attorney's fees, and some of the attorney's fees have been fairly substantial, in the hundreds of thousands of dollars worth. If I were faced, even in a group, of going to court for a public interest case, and I knew that case was going to cost $100,000, which is not outside the realm if you've got a lot of people involved in, let's say, a community group that wanted to stop a house of prostitution that was in my neighborhood, which is a public interest litigant case. It's on our books. If I were a member of a group of parents that wanted something taught in the school that wasn't being taught, or I conversely didn't want something taught in the school and I wanted to go to court, and when I knew it was going to be a $100,000 case, and I knew I was going to be responsible now for a higher percentage, for the 35%, that would stop me. That would make me think very hard before going in. I think that that's at the heart. Make people think harder before they go in. You will automatically reduce the number of public interest litigants simply by this amendment alone. I don't believe that's the right thing to do, but I think in the spirit of compromise, it's not a bad start, and it's certainly better than where we're headed with the CS. So for that reason, I will really support the amendment and encourage members to think about the underlying meaning behind the whole effort. Thank you.
Further debate on amendment number one. Representative Guerin, wrap up.
Mr. Speaker, I have a list of cases from virtually every member's district where people in the past have enjoyed the benefits of this rule that we have in the state that's about to be taken away. Just trust me on that one. You'll hear about it tomorrow. I don't want to hold you today. But that's why people from the Disability Law Center to the Alaska Council of Village Presidents oppose this bill and sure would be happy if you'd vote for this amendment over the bill. I just need to clarify one more thing for members of this body because I'm still not so sure it's clear. The public interest litigant rule used to apply in all cases. This most recent version of the bill says that some new rule, it's not really even the same old rule on public interest litigants, applies. It only applies in constitutional cases. But, you know, tons of these public interest litigant cases were non-constitutional, challenging the Department of Environmental Conservation when it's gone overboard, challenging the Department of Natural Resources when it's refused to allow a fair land sale to members of the public. Tons of them have been non-constitutional. And I hope the members in their wisdom, either today or tomorrow, find some way to stand up to the third floor and say the public does deserve access to its government and the public does deserve the right to challenge government misconduct.
Question before the House is the adoption of amendment number one. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk locked roll. Anyone wish to change their vote? Madam Clerk.
10 yeas, 27 nays.
So amendment number one has failed to pass the House. Madam Clerk, do you have additional amendments?
Amendment number two to the title only, page one, line one.
The objection, amendment number two has been withdrawn. Madam Clerk.
Amendment number three to page three, line 16 through 23. Oh, I'm sorry, by Representative Guerra.
Representative Guerra.
Mr. Speaker, could I have a brief at ease?
I'll stand at ease. Where were we? Amendment number three? Amendment number three? House, please come back to order. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Kapsner and Moses be excused from the call of the House for the remainder of the day.
Without objection, those two members plus any other minority members will be shown excused from the call of the House for the remainder of the day.
Don't want to text. There's a job.
Just don't go to the Howard Johnsons.